CliffCentral.com.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Good evening. My name is Eugene Khoza. I'm going to be your host for tonight. I'm just going to introduce the main event. I'm glad you guys made it here instead of watching the inquiry on GS4S, CS4, G428, G4SS. I don't have faith in those parliamentarians. The fact that they don't even know who they're talking to confuses me. Because I'm like, how are you going to find them guilty if you don't know their names? GC4, GCS. But I'm glad we came to that point now. We're at the end of the longest hide-and-seek game ever South Africa has ever played. When we were looking for Thabo Best, it was... We were all looking at each other going, are you Thabo? Are you Thabo, eh? You know Thabo. So we've ended that game of hide-and-seek. So I'm glad we're here today. We're going to have a special guest. But before that, I'd like to introduce the concept of what we're doing today. Today's concept is, this is the second episode that we've ever done of the Uncancelled Conversations with Garrett Cliff. Basically, it's a conversation with an interesting person that both Gareth and I find interesting. Because we talk about these things and we go, who's the most interesting person that we can... Yo? Kenton. Have you gotten tested?
Work with me.
Yeah, some coughs are not to be taken lightly. Some coughs mean stay at home by yourself. Okay, so this is how we started this thing was, who do we find interesting and what are the conversations that we could have with them? So what I liked about Gareth is every time I do Gareth's interviews on his show, I always found interesting the conversation that we had after the show, right? Those that people don't get to hear, the off-air conversations. Then we said to each other, how about if people get to sit in on the off-air conversations? That's what's interesting. But the kind of stuff that is said off-air could get you cancelled. But if we understand that we're not really on air, but we're off-air, but we're talking about things that we'll talk about on air, but we're not really on air because we are off-air, then who can really cancel us because it's GC4S, GCS, G4S? So that's what we are having here. It's a G4S kind of a conversation. And we picked our guests very, very carefully. Interesting people. Last time was Unathi Nkayi. Those of you who came to join us and those who watch on YouTube, we thank you. Their views are incredible. So I'd like to introduce the host for this evening's Uncancelled Conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the main event, your host and your moderator, Mr. Gareth Cliff. Oh, you need this one.
What? Testing. All right. Hi, everybody. First of all, this feels more like a welcome to our new home, especially for those people who've been part of what we've been doing for so many years. There's a lot of comment section people here, Canton. If you're wondering, there's a lot of comment section going on here tonight, so we're expecting at least the same amount of fire that we get every day on the fucking show from you people. I want to welcome everybody to our new premises. A special thank you to those people who are regular listeners. And I don't mean this in any light way. I don't mean this in any kind of insincere or flippant way. But when we first advertised that you could buy a ticket, probably the first time we've charged for anything, the tickets were limited. People snapped them up immediately. And nobody really had a chance after the comment section climbed in. So you all know who you are, and thank you very much. And now we know who you are, and now I know what you look like. So expect rude comments on air every now and then, right? But really, these are the most loyal listeners in South Africa. They have stuck by us. Listen, I'm sure that some of our shows have been really, really boring for you. I mean, some of them must be just, you think, why did I even bother today? But then... you know, the next day, hopefully we pick it back up and you go, oh, all right, that's why I listen. But none of you have ever unsubscribed. I mean, the names, you know, there's Rebellious Ruth, Sanele, there's Mfundo at the back. Now, Mfundo is actually, like, he was our number one listener from day one. He found our website before we even told anybody what the URL was. And he ended up working for us for a while. And he went on to greater things, which I know he's teaching people now, which is tremendous. And Mfundo, you really are just a shining example to me. You know, when you get these stupid ad agency people around, no offense if anyone's from ad, and they say to you, who are your listeners? And I go, well, I can't tell you who our listeners are because they are as diverse and varied and interesting as South Africa is. And if you still think that way, then Favurt is dead. Go and join him. You know, demographics. People, what are your demographics? And I'm like, okay, when we started this thing, everybody said to me, data, it's too expensive. Data, how are people going to... Sorry, Mfundo, I'm using you now as an example, but everyone went, data, no one's going to listen. Only very rich people will be able to listen to Cliff Central. And I said, ooh, very rich people, that's fine. But turned out, if people want something, they don't care what it costs, they'll get it. And I think, you know, Mfundo, who was at that point in Lokshin in KwaZulu-Natal, right? He was like on the bones of his backside, like a little bit of transport money, trying to make his way, studying still at that stage. And he was listening to us every day. And I was like, you know, you people at these agencies, you don't understand this country. Because a guy like him, you don't factor into your stuff. And that's what makes me so interested about like meeting everybody. And I'm sure, you know, the next time we do this, I'm going to have some story about someone else in this crowd. So just get ready. But I really do want to thank you all for being here. And to wake up as early as we wake up to be part of the show is just my favorite thing. It keeps me going. It keeps the rest of our team going. I'm sure you've met Simpiwe. I'm sure you've met Ryan. I'm sure you've met Homolemo. I'm sure you've met Jane, right? Isn't she as fantastic as you thought she was? So, thank you for coming to our second recording of Uncancelled. Our special guest tonight is Professor Mamokgethi Phakeng, who knows a thing or two about being cancelled. But before we bring her up, I want to introduce you to someone else who you may not have expected to meet tonight, but who is going to be probably your highlight of the evening. Someone who's very well known as my Burning Platform co-host of many years, Phumi Mashego. Pums. So this is Phumi, everybody. So now she can see you as well. And yeah, and now she knows who to respond to in the comment section as well. So Pums, all the people who talk about us and talk about what we do or don't do on the Burning Platform, now you know, right? We will open up the floor a little bit later for comments and questions and all the rest of it. So welcome. As Eugene said, the idea here is for us to have those conversations that you can't have anywhere else. And we did it first, and I'm very, very proud to say we continue doing it, and now we do it in even smarter premises. And you're all very, very welcome. There's more food and drink after. Oh, by the way, you have to get the fuck out at about 9:30 latest, or there's no show tomorrow. Simpiwe and I are not waiting to clean up after you at 12 o'clock. We're not doing it. Right, Simpiwe? So I know... you've never been to a party before where the hostess says you have to leave by this time, but I've just said that. So, and I don't mind how rude you think I am. All right? I'm not trying to make new friends, so you're welcome. Thank you. All right, I'm going to grab a seat, and then I'll introduce you to the star of the show, Professor Mamokgethi Phakeng, whose Twitter bio reads as follows. Don't get twisted. I'm only here to inspire and give hope. So here she is, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so we're going to sort out these mics. Thank you, Ryan. Cool. Just by way of a quick introduction, and thank you so much, Prof. I know you've been busy, and I know you've been doing a little bit of a media tour lately, and you've spoken to a lot of people, including, you were saying, Sizwe Mpofu-Walsh. Have you seen JJ Tabane again? Do you want to just pull that a little bit closer?
JJ is my friend, so okay, I talk with him whether I'm here or not, even in Cape Town. When he's in Cape Town, he pops into my house, so he knows that I'm here. We just haven't met yet.
And Mac G, you've done, so it's really, I mean, I'm hoping tonight we'll touch on some things that the others haven't and in a different way, so you're welcome to also interrupt us and say, hey, how about this at any time you like. I had a very interesting Saturday last week. And this is also why these Uncancelled sessions are so important, because we need to hear the stories of people who are alive and with us right now and making a difference in society. Because last Saturday, I was in Guamashu, and I was invited to give a lecture on Pixlika Isakaseme, who was the founder of the SANNC, which was the progenitor to the ANC, back in 1912. He was born in the late 1800s, qualified in law at Columbia, and later on at Oxford, got a master's degree in law. He is single-handedly responsible for having negotiated the sovereign independence of both Swaziland and Lesotho from the British Empire at a time when not even South Africa or Zimbabwe were sovereign independent nations from Britain. This is unbelievable. The fact that so few people in this country know his name is a travesty, and I was delighted that the foundation, which has been set up in his name and which is run now by his grandson, is doing as much as it can to remind people of his story. Because, again, there are so many great South Africans who are doing and have done incredible things. So, when we get going here, I think we've got to start by just teaching. Like, this is where it all began for you. Teachers Training College, right, Prof?
Well, that's my first year of work, was at the Teachers College at Hebron College of Education. But, of course, I also did my matric there.
And, education's changed so much since then, because a lot of those teachers training colleges have gone. A lot of our technicons are gone. A lot of the skills development places are gone. And universities are seemingly thriving. And we'll talk about that just now. But do you think, as an easy first question, do you think it was a mistake for the Department of Education to get rid of so many of those places in the very beginning?
No, it wasn't a good decision. But I want to get to your point about so much has changed. Mm. It's not just education that has changed. The country has changed. I mean, anyone my age who's a black African.
35?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm 57, right? No secret why. So, I went through many different systems. You must remember that during apartheid, as the politics were changing, education was changing. Mm. So I've been part of the Department of Education and Training, and then Buputatswana happened to me, just like it Transkei and Ciskei happened to other people. And then, of course, Buputatswana introduced a different curriculum and education, which they called Education for Popagano, which was apparently based on Nyerere's Education for Self-Reliance. And then they changed the schools, they introduced middle schools and so on. So then those of us who Putatswana happened to, then we went out of the DET system
right. Into
the Putatswana system. And that, do you see what I mean? So when you get, it's interesting what happens when politics change. What changes first? And education is one of the big things. Education, basic education, it gets changed. Language policy is another thing that changes. And you can imagine why. Even with colonization, the thing that they needed to get to the colonizers is education. Because once you get that, you shape what people become, want to become, aspire to, and so on.
And politicians like to know that they've got control of that,
course,
too.
Of course, of course.
But so many amazingly driven black leaders came out of education, because education was a place, Pumi was talking to me about this earlier, about how education offered the first job to so many black intellectuals. Because it was a place where they could actually find the source materials, where they were able to, you know, get the degrees. I mean, it wasn't easy in those days, but
no.
It was certainly, like, education was a good starting place. That's why so many of our, you know, our leaders were first teachers.
No, but I'm sure Mpumi can talk more about this, because you're forgetting the point that black people, there were professions that were for black people.
Mm.
You could only become a teacher. I don't know whether that was law or not, but it was teaching, nursing, police, you know, and nursing was great because you earned money on your first month in training, whilst you're training. So many people, you know, went to nursing not because they wanted to, but because during the first month, from matric, you get into nursing home, nursing school, the first month you get a salary so you can take care of parents, and then you don't pay school. Now, in Buputa Tswana, remember, politics again.
Mangwape.
In Buputa Tswana, they introduced the University of Buputa Tswana. I don't know how the other homeland, apartheid homelands thought about this. But the way Mangope thought about it, I mean, it was a fascinating thing. I mean, I'm writing my memoir, and I've got chapters where I talk about this because it's quite fascinating what was in the curriculum and how the university was organized. So everything in the university, all the programs they offered were professional programs. And here's the thing. They were thinking, we're building a country, and therefore we need people who can work in the public service. So you need nurses, teachers, accountants, lawyers, you know. So if you do a BSc, it's BSc education. You do law, it's stream. You do a BCom, it's a stream to be a CA. Whether after that BCom you're going to be a CA or not is neither here. Social work, so there was a Bachelor of Social Work. There was no Bachelor of Social Science. What are you going to do with that? There was no BA plain. What are you going to do with that? Yeah. There was a BA education. So anyway, and all the programs were four-year programs, okay? So the idea was you get out, you get into a job. And all the programs, Garrett, this is fascinating. All the programs, you had to do work experience. So it wasn't only the people who were in teaching who had to go and teach in schools. Social workers had to do work experience. Lawyers did, law students did, worked in the magistrates' courts, whatever. Everybody had to do something.
That was ahead, commerce of, its, students, ahead of its time.
It was what?
Ahead of its time. In some
it,
ways.
It was. Yeah. I mean, in many ways it was. I mean, by the way, and I'm going to finish because I want to hear what Mpumi is. I keep looking at Mpumi and thinking, I wonder how old she was, whether she went through this nonsense that we went through.
She's very mysterious, don't you worry. She'll reveal all just now.
Fascinating. But here's the thing that's also interesting about University of Buputa Tswana. Development studies was compulsory for everyone. Development studies was compulsory and special English was compulsory.
Wow.
And because... And the people who were the many of the... There was no shortage of black academics, young black academics with doctorates, young black African academics with doctorates. And many of them were children of people who had gone to exile. And because the university was there in Mabato, their families were banned in another country, South Africa. Duh. Yeah. So they could just go through the border of Botswana into Mabato,
right,
teach. And then when holidays come, they cross the border, go to Botswana. Naledi Pando was a lecturer there. Professor Ndai had skipped the country. They came back, Professor Nohwana. The McLean sisters, those who are in politics would know these people, McLean sisters. So we were taught about by these ones, the McLean sisters, who were really cool. And they had doctorates, they're beautiful, and they're South African. And, you know, the Dr. Botlhale Tema. And
Of Dr. Nandipa tonight, all right?
No. This, by the way, these are different doctorates. These are doctorates with red gowns.
The real doctor.
No, I know.
With red gowns, darling. So, as you can hear, it was like all black. And then because of the time, there were also countries that were in political turmoil. So expatriates, we had maths lecturers, for example, from Ireland. Northern Ireland, from Iraq. There were Sri Lanka. And during the 80s, I mean, I went to university. My first year was in 1984. I mean, I was 16 going on to 17, right? If you look at all those countries, there were countries that were in turmoil. And of course, those kinds of people are not... We had professors from Jamaica. You know, I mean, seeing another black person, confident, whatever, looks like you, but is not from this country. I mean, it's quite something to see in the middle of apartheid, right? Mm. And so you could aspire to that. So there was no shortage of black academics with doctorates. And then development studies was compulsory, but of course development studies is basically politicization. You learn about the migrant labor system, you learn about, I mean, as much as you learn about...
But it's context.
Yeah.
It was the most important context.
It was. But it's interesting that it's Puputatswana. And then every year there would be a development studies lecturer who gets deported.
Get cancelled. We use the word cancelled.
Exactly. Cancelled. And I used to think, clearly, Mangope doesn't have a say on what happens in the curriculum. So he gets the message afterwards that...
We don't like that guy.
Yes, we don't like what that guy, what they are taught in this. And they would say, it's this guy, he must go. And then they would go back to Botswana or whatever. Mm. In the, I did education, of course, as a compulsory major. And for the first time in my life, I mean, remember, you've gone through apartheid education and then homeland education. I had never heard of Ujamaa education. I mean, where would you hear it in apartheid, guys? No. Poor.
We didn't even
There's
know.
No way.
Okay, so, but what you then raise about the learning that you had in Bophuthatswana and in the University of Bophuthatswana, similarly, what we were told you were being brought into UCT to do is also part of this diversification, not just of the curriculum, but also of the teaching staff and all of that. And yet, here we sit, having had this major fallout with the university. Do you think that there is a lot of political interference and that is why you were not able to finish the project that you were brought there to do?
I mean, it's interesting. In the 80s, political interference was from government, not from the establishment within the institution. Of course, there were spies. The spies were plenty in those kinds of institutions. I mean, the politics come or from within, right? It's the establishment. It's the people who want to keep the old in place. And the issues, we can talk about a little bit about why don't people want it. I mean, I've thought a lot about why is it that transformation scares people? I mean, and by the way, I mean, for me, I have to be clear to you that... Senate, which is majority white males, old white males, voted for me to have a second term. Mm. That's starting in July. So don't ever think all white people don't want me. They voted for me to be there because I'm an academic, first and foremost. I'm a rated scholar, right? A scientist. I'm not just an academic who dabbles here and there. Okay, So the politics, what's politics has changed. And Cape Town is pretty interesting because Cape Town also has got a different political history. I'm sure people who are from Cape Town, I mean, people think the complexity of Cape Town is only in the racial spectrum. You know, I mean, in Cape Town, even when you say colored, what do you mean? Because some people are colored culturally.
Malay. Yeah.
Well, culture. In the past, there used to be people whose IDs were Hottentots or Malay, Cape Malay, wah. People come from different... And then there's intermarriages between Indian and colored, colored and black, whatever. So some people call themselves interrace.
Not
so
to mention Christian, Muslim,
And,
language, and exactly, Afrikaans, English.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's not even the... I mean, there's that complexity. But before we get to that, there's the complexity of the politics, right? The politics of during apartheid, of the anti-apartheid movements. There's people who come from the union movement and the whatever. So UDM. The people who are UDM and their differences of them and who was on which side. And, you know, so those politics haven't gone away. And then, of course, there's the Muslim factor, which is not trivial at all.
Yeah.
Not trivial at all. It's not in Cape Town. I mean, Gauteng, guys, Gauteng is an amazing place. It's cosmopolitan. I mean, Western Cape is something else. You know, for me, coming from Joburg, I mean, I love it for different reasons, but it feels like in Gauteng, there's a lot of other things that we don't necessarily, I mean, we've got our own, you know, racial contestations or whatever, but there's a lot of things that are better done. That's, are not an issue. Yeah. That are an issue in Cape Town. So when someone says Wits and UCT are the same, I'm like, duh. Mm-hmm. Not. Context matters, you know? Yeah. Besides my usual example of when you're at Wits and there's disagreements, there's blood on the floor, at UCT there's internal bleeding, you know? And you know, you die, but you don't realize until you fall down. Mm-hmm. And there's no shooting. At Fort Hare, they shoot you, okay? In Western Cape, they will not shoot you. You will shoot yourself, okay? because internal bleeding or whatever. You'll deal with yourself. So and then people, of course, think that... But there's it's much more... It still has got that English... particularly the campus, not the whole of Cape Town. I'm just saying, but there's a lot of complexity. The spatial.
So where's the? Because this is also something that I think is important. The context. You know, again, you came in after the whole fees must fall thing, mm-hmm. and you managed to stabilize the place, mm-hmm. which is no small feat.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of people who criticize you, and maybe they disagree with your politics. Or they think that you've got away with all this money. I mean, this is like an obsession. I know people have this obsession with how much money you got out, no right? Money. Like, whoo, she got 12 million, now she must help
Did
me.
Did I?
Well, that's what they say.
Wow. I mean, Adrien Basson said that, but
Did
I don't know.
Yeah, well.
In contact, nothing. No huh? In contact.
I don't know. I don't know.
Can you Adrien Basson can you said e-wallet? That. Just to,
I don't know.
I can see.
I know nothing about money. Adrien Basson apparently is the authority on UCT and the agreement that they signed on me with me. I agreed with UCT that the contents of the agreement I will not discuss. And so what I will say to you is I've never seen Adrien Basson in my life. I have no idea why he hates me. I think, is he in the audience? Adrien Basson, you know.
looks like Ryan.
No, Ryan.
That's producer Ryan.
Don't fall for it, Ryan. No, we didn't invite him.
I really hope
we have that in common. He doesn't like me. So he doesn't. He doesn't like you either. He doesn't like. I don't know if he.
But you don't sell as much newspapers as I do, because I sell newspapers, my darling. I mean that's why you're not in all newspapers, and I'm sure your article is free. Mine is not free. if you want to read mine, he makes sure that you pay first. You know those kind of ones that News24 is like, you pay first. He makes a lot of money on me. So I hope he gets wealthy. And I hope whoever set him up and whoever is leaking information to him, I hope that person is paying him well. Mm. I hope, because a lot of it is hogwash.
So, all right. I mean, it would be nice to imagine 12 million rand. It would be...
No. All I can say to you is that I'm not broke and I'm not in a hurry to get permanent appointment. I'm on sabbatical, I'm writing, and so on, just like academics do.
So all these stories that we've heard about how you can't talk, I mean, you hear talking and you don't seem to have a gag order from my point of view. I mean, we're gonna struggle to
gag
stop
order.
You. But people were saying, oh, well, you know, if she speaks out of turn because of the agreement she's made, she could lose all this money. So that's all nonsense.
No, someone wrote on the... On some WhatsApp group that I'm on, it's a crazy WhatsApp group. Probably all of you who are there, it's crazy WhatsApp. I don't know how I got in there. Someone said, oh, she's such a big mistake. She went to JJ and talk. UCT is going to cancel the agreement. I was like, I don't know law, but I read my agreement. If they cancel, they're going to have to deal with the fact that I must go back and be VC.
Right.
And then we must start afresh. I mean, it's not such a simple matter, but that's what I thought. So I don't know, but Adrien Basson knows better.
So being a mathematician, maths educator, and, you know, being a person who educates about solving problems and figuring out where the gap is or what the missing piece is. In your reflection, have you figured out yet where the missing piece in creating a higher education system that is available to everyone here in South Africa is?
I'm trying to figure out availability in terms of fee free.
Yeah.
See, that's why I have Pumi here. I can't. I ask the stupid questions. She comes up with the good. Like, you took a minute there with my questions. You're like, what bullshit.
No, I'm going.
Still with this.
I'm going there. But I also realized that I didn't answer the question about that you asked. But I want to go to, because the question that you asked, I said, let me deal with this. And then sure. I got sidetracked. You know, Pumla, that's a very important question. I don't think it's a decision that you make overnight. Frankly speaking, I think we had a golden moment before 94, or when we started 94, to do that. As much as I think we had a golden moment to introduce a way of being that would be better than during apartheid. I mean, I keep thinking, you know, how amazing it would have been if Mandela, bless his soul, he didn't say a better life for all, but he said, we are now going to have a country. It's our country. It's our country. We never had an opportunity to own anything. Now we're going to own. And when you own something, you take care of it. Now, we're going to show them how this thing. These people have done a mess with this country. The way the cities, the townships, the way they're organized, totally. Let's do it. Sort of not saying we're going to get free houses. Yeah. And then, and not to say you don't build free houses. You still build them, and you build them here in the middle of Sandton, you know, to integrate the rich and the poor. I mean, this thing that we have here is a problem, and black middle class like it, because even the black middle class don't want to see the poor.
Mm.
Yes, it's a problem. So in a way, the way we've continued with the same structure and system of apartheid. What's different, it's the complexion of the hands and the people who are in power. I mean, in a way. So
there are fewer people with access, you mean, to that life.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you can talk about this, you know, the poverty of today is not the same as the poverty even of the 80s. My kind of poverty is nowhere close to this. It was worse, right? But even that, I mean, I think that there's many things that are very, that we've kept in track. And so even the issue of higher education, of education just general, the fact that irrespective of all the discussions and the ANC leadership, and I'm saying ANC particularly because they won the elections, and all the discussions they had and everything that's in the Freedom Charter, even with that, in those first meetings, they're thinking about everything. They never got to a point of saying, now, let's plan now. We're going to make education free. How do we do this? How do we, whether they say anyone who starts grade one in 1994, from then on, they are going to have free. So we're going to build, we get tax, we get this. This is how we're going to,
okay, but with,
you know. I'm just saying, even just that debate, just getting, you know, it's no way. I can see even the debate on language, I mean, on language policy, we have 11 official languages, not because African leaders fought for the African languages to be there. If you look at the documents, you realize that the reason we have 11 is because the Afrikaners were refusing to have only English. They were saying, we must have Afrikaans. And it was a long debate. Then they say, but if we have Afrikaans, then we must have Zulu.
Mm.
Then the conclusion was, okay, let's have everything then.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they forgot that we've got the Khoisan, the first peoples of Cape Town, right? So, and then they think about it years after. Because the Khoi people didn't have a representation, right? But even just that, it shows you that... The thinking in terms of what the country should be, it was in a colonial mode,
but
if you like.
Amokheti, the tertiary education system seems to me to be broken. It seems that it's hugely expensive for no good reason.
Yeah.
In America, for example, where they supposedly got it right, although that's debatable, 400% increases in the administrative staff in those Ivy League colleges. 400%. That means that the students are actually paying for a bunch of administrators. They're not even paying for their professors or for the actual classes that they're taking. And these swollen bureaucracies that develop around these universities, even in this country, you know, you've got people who are running the office of I don't know what and this and that and the other, and they're all being paid, and they've got quite comfortable jobs. I mean, you see them, you know, you'd see people leaving the campus at UCT or the campus here at WITS, and you think, that person's too old to be a student, but they're working there, and they're driving a nice car, and they've been working there for, I don't know, 15 years, and the students are paying for that. So first of all, why does it have to be so expensive? Second of all, is it the best system we've built to make everything, it's make or break? You see these kids like pushing up against the fences and stampeding to try and get in the beginning of the year to get a degree, and we've got enough fucking lawyers, don't we? Prof, I think we need no more lawyers. Can we stop them? I mean, I studied law, so you can accuse me whatever you like here, but enough. We need some engineers. Do we need all the other things? Don't we need skills? Again, back to my question at the beginning. And is university, for so many parents, it's like, if I can just, I'm talking about black parents who's like, they can put one kid in there or two kids. Like, if I can just get my kid to university, then they'll be okay. That's not true. Last year, in fact, 2 years ago during COVID, 800,000 people who applied for grants were university graduates.
The 350 grant, sure.
The 350 Rand grant. Hmm. I mean, Prof, we're churning out graduates and we have nothing to do with them. That's a sad, sad state of affairs. And I'm not holding you responsible
I'm going to respond.
For all tertiary education. But it's sick. It's a sick system.
Okay. So there are several things going on here, Gareth. I mean, the issue is what are universities for? I mean, right? And in your question, you also putting together skills development and university, sort of, if you like, you can say TVETs and the other. And of course, it connects to the question that you asked first, was it a wise idea to close nursing homes, colleges, whatever? Bad idea, technically, bad idea, right? It was a bad idea, thanks to Kada Asmal.
Mm-hmm.
Bad idea.
Do you think he's burning in the same hell as Verwoerd?
Hey, Pumi's talking about people. Did you see why she whispered that? Someone burning in hell.
I'm Catholic. People, I really do, because
who's he burning with?
Verwoerd. Because same system, right?
It's a crowded hell, that.
But because I agree it was a bad idea.
To notice that Pumla is saying that and her face looks innocent and I always look like the naughty one and they will say it's me. It is not me. I hope you noticed. It's Pumla who said that. I didn't even say yes. I just kept quiet.
Mara, you thought it. You thought yes. Bad idea. No, but really, seriously.
It was a bad idea. Bad idea. No question about it. I mean, and you know, the thing is, you break something to rebuild it. It takes a different energy and it's not always possible to get it back to. We had something going that we could have transformed to do what we wanted to. But education, given our history in this country, we should never forget that. Given our history, education has got a different meaning and purpose. It's not just about becoming a lawyer. It's about social status also.
Yeah.
And you, as a trust fund baby who grew up in Lavish, whatever, you have too many lawyers. We don't have lawyers in my family.
I'm not a trust fund baby.
I was looking at that lady. I don't know why you're owning it.
The you people.
But you're right, social status. Yeah.
But let me finish. So just to say, when parents of black people want all their children to go to university, and when all the children at high school want to go to university, I understand. I don't think there's anything wrong in that. I understand where it comes from. Many of them, they'll be the first to go into university. You know, one of the things that I'm very proud of at UCT that I've changed is that when I left, not only did we have more than 50% black students, but we had 41.5% of our first years being first in family to come to university.
Wow.
I mean, a whole entire UCT. Mm. I mean, it's...
That's impressive.
That changes. I mean, first of all, it's so difficult to get into UCT because of the results that you get. Even if you meet the points, you are so many who meet the points. You still have to compete with people who got A's. It's like, what kind of an A you got, you know? So it's really important for many parents to get their children to go to university. The question that we should be asking then is, what is university education for? What does it serve? I think our expectation that university education is for a job is actually flawed.
Mm.
It's completely flawed. It's good if it gets you a job. And in the past, in some context, it would get you a job immediately because there were shortage of people and so on and so forth. But it should do more than that. But because we have sort of taught our young people that this is what it is, and of course, if you do an LLB, you're going to be a lawyer, but, you could end up doing something else, right?
First, I think you have to pay that off.
But my view is that public education should be free, by the way.
Mm.
I mean, if you think it is expensive, we can afford it as a country, I can tell you we cannot afford to have the uneducated people, the number of uneducated people that we have who don't have higher education. We cannot afford. And if we make it free, we make sure that the what it's about changes. What is post-school education about? Not just in our policies changes, but also in the public perception, how we talk about it, how we value it. It might help because we will get a lot of graduates who actually become entrepreneurs. I mean, that's one of the things that I drove strongly at UCT, which is very unusual for a research-intensive university. I drove student entrepreneurship in general. I even made entrepreneurship report to me. I was the only vice chancellor who went to all the student entrepreneurship competitions. I'm there with the students. Our team won every year. We are the reigning winners of the entrepreneurial university of the year. We won it 3 times. It started 4 years ago.
Excellent.
And it's not usual for a research intensive university to do that, right? And we have different programs. Some of the programs, one of the programs that I found that students were running in residences, the pitch, they're running themselves and they were getting vouchers. And I said to them, I'm going to partner with you. I'll fund you. But so this is in collaboration with the vice chancellor's office. And what that did, it just upped the pitch. The business school came in, the D school came in, the engineering school. All the staff members who are doing, who are in entrepreneurship coming in, the whole year workshopping the students. But the students are in the committee, the ones in the academic residence council, they run it, they organize the last whatever, and I am there. They get their judges. And then when they come to I'm there, I'm the one rooting for them. And it does something. It says we are serious about this as a university. And so many of our university, our students, when they graduate, they've already made their millions. And they don't go to work. They start a business. I mean, it's growing. I mean, the 3 students who won last year the national competitions as well. One already has made 50 million. She makes perfumes. She supplies. Yes, she supplies Dis-Chem, Cliques.
Stop pretending it's not you.
She just graduated. And here's one for you. She's just graduated and she was doing an LLB.
Yeah, well, not all LLBs are wasted.
No, I'm just saying.
Are you backtracking?
Because they're all going to be suing me tomorrow.
Are you backtracking?
No.
And then the other one who won the big prize started a company from Orange Farm here, went to some township school, a company that manufactures bricks from waste.
Oh, yeah.
And he's not even doing civil engineering. He's doing chemical engineering. Mm. And got this idea, worked with people who are doing sustainability, went to civil engineering. We have a urine brick laboratory. We're making bricks from urine.
Nice.
And what? Yeah. So talk to them. Talk to. They don't even smell. There's no smell. You go into the urine laboratory. No smell. Right.
Anybody want to build their house with urine bricks?
And
it's
and
sustainable. I mean, the only thing is sustainable development.
The
goals.
Urine bricks. It takes too long to manufacture. Right. So they're trying to do something else.
Thank goodness.
But they. but your paving maybe. Right. But what I'm saying to you is that you've got students from township, from Model C, from rural villages, come to UCT, they got good results. They get, because we're driving entrepreneurship, they get interested, they're encouraged and challenged to think in an entrepreneurial. And my message to them, when I talk to students about entrepreneurship, is to say to them, each one of you, you will know you've got good education if you have an entrepreneurial mind. Whether you're going to get a job or not, you will be successful. Because if you've got an entrepreneurial mind, even if you are in a job, every employer will want you because you will be the problem solver. You'll save the company money. You'll grow what the company does. I mean, we can improve service delivery if we changed all of our employees to have an entrepreneurial mindset that you don't come to work and just chill. Actually, you can make more money if your employer makes more money. People don't think that way. Mm. You know, people think, I must steal and make this thing go down. Let me take pocket things to go home. Actually, you make your company succeed. They make more money. You will make more. You'll get a bonus and the company grows. We'll hire more people. You come with an idea. Your company does this. You come with an idea. Of course, the employers must also wake up. Stop exploiting people. You know, but you need, I want our graduates to do, and I wish all university students can have that having a degree and not having this curious, creative mindset, problem solving, it's actually going to waste my time. It's not going to make me the most employable person with a degree. But if I do this and I can, actually some of them, they realize, oh no, I actually don't even need to work. I'm graduating, but I have my own company. They've hired other people. And because it's UCT, it's all the bright students from everywhere. You can imagine. I mean, there's some who were one in 2019, two from Malawi, one from Eastern Cape, the other one from KZN. They met here. They are not even in the same, I mean, I was asking them, how did you meet? They're not even doing the same degree. One is doing humanities, and the one who's doing humanities is the one who set up the appointment with me to tell me what they're doing. And there's one in engineering, one in business. The one who's in business science is the one who came with the idea. But actually, there's others who are doing technical stuff, but the boss is the one who's doing business science. I mean, it's fascinating. And I'm like, this is a rich environment. I say to them, free Wi-Fi. Free consultants, because academics are here, they're free consultants. Once we work with other people, we charge them per hour or part thereof. But if you're a student, you can ask me. It's free. And then you've got free, very bright, possible business partners who are just as smart as you are, as hardworking as you are, you know, who want to succeed as you do.
They really should have paid you that 12 million. You should have done the best. the best marketing campaign that
can
UCT didn't know they
Blade?
Needed. Yeah. Yeah, wow.
Can we replace Blade? Yeah,
please just be Minister of Higher Education. I mean, I think Blade is high, but he's not in higher education. The only time Blade is high is when he starts talking.
When?
All right, but you've got a question, Pumi. Serious one now.
No, but it's not high, man. You know, because here's the thing, right? So you have made higher education fashionable, right? Uh-huh. So when you came in and you're fab academic and you have past 3 a.m. squad, all of those things, right, have made higher education exciting. And for all your students, it's also why everybody wants to come to UCT, is because they hope to see you in the library with the chocolate. But what should we be doing more in the rest of the universities? And I'm a pair, I mean, this is also a very, for me, it's a very selfish question because I'm talking about universities with my son. So what is it that we should be doing more of as parents, as the community, as educators in the primary education too, to prepare students into that space, into the university space, so that when they arrive, they are those curious students. They are out there wanting to be more.
But I think the same message that I said, I could have said it at a high school valediction ceremony. You know, what's going to make you successful? You can get the degree. There's so many people with the same degree that you have. What's going to make you stand out? Curiosity, problem solving, you know, good team player, You know, I would start that from a young age, from children young age. I mean, it's interesting, your question when you say people, because Gareth said universities are expensive, we pay people, You know, interesting thing about universities is that our role is not just to produce graduates, to produce knowledge. And actually, the more we get students to be the way that I've been describing, the more knowledge we can produce. I mean, the best academics, the best scientists have got brilliant teams, which with majority are students. Of course, there could be some honor students, masters and PhD, and maybe one or two postdocs. But without an army of smart and curious and innovative students, it's not so easy for any professor to be successful on their own. In fact, as you go up in the academic ladder, you are more successful if you are more successful if your people, the students who come up, you know, become as creative as that. So I think we should encourage that from a young age, that kind of curiosity. And I mean, I'm hoping that at the moment, I mean, I don't have young children. My children are adults, right? But I'm hoping that, I'm really praying every day that parents of young children who are 7 or 8, my friend in Canada, who's a professor, tells me that his child, who's young, already has got a YouTube channel, and what, you know, they're fighting about this YouTube channel. I hope parents are having that kind of problem, that we want unkept data because my YouTube channel, or they're boasting about, you know, they're boasting the about this podcast that's already in the family, at family dinner, that, or this... you know, someone is posting about this garden thing, a mobile garden that they're doing at home that's producing this and that while someone is running a YouTube channel, podcast, someone is... I mean, I'm hoping that we more and more could have those kinds of problems where children start thinking, we don't like these vegetables from the supermarket down the road. They don't really... This banana doesn't taste like a banana anymore. why is it like this? Can we plant our own so that, can we, you know, or gets curious. What does a seed of a banana, what do you do if you want to plant a banana? What do you put underground? Is there a seed, or do you put the whole, you cut a leaf and put it, or do you put the peel? What do you do? You know, I want students, young people, children who get curious about that. What does that seed look like? You know, so from that to tech to, you know, to everything that, and if we get the you know, that kind of environment going, and by the way, for me, my first entry to social media, and the reason I did all of that was actually to get that kind of energy just among our young people. I mean, I'm sure if anyone was following me during the lockdown, you'd know that I did a whole lot of things. I mean, I did lectures online, like 70 of them, 1 hour Sunday sessions from 4 to 5. Mm-hmm. And then last year I serve on the Geneva Science and Diplomacy Anticipator, where basically what we're dealing with, I mean, I have no idea how they got me onto this, because this is a group of Swiss people, scientists and so on, and the big thing that we're dealing with is the fast pace in the development of science and technology, and the fact that the governance and you know, is not growing at that pace. And so you know, technology is growing. We're gonna have, I mean, if you're worried about ChatGPT, I mean, just in 3 years you'll have something that's much, much smarter than the smartest human being. Mm. And of course, people still think it's the past. They're like, it will be only as smart as the computer, the person who computer. But then there's also other things like medication that's made to cure cancer, for example. Can you use it for other things?
Prof,
are young people, you know, are there is there regulation for that? And I put that
on. I just looked at the time now. Stop. This always happens. No. Like, I just want to go to some.
Time.
We've got these people here live. It's a live event. We record it. But I do want to ask some questions. And there's still a lot that Pumi and I wanted to ask you, but I don't think we're going to have time for that. So who's up first? Go ahead, Sintle. Go for it.
Comes to transformation, that was incredible because I think we didn't realize the impact of what representation means in the university to see lecturers that look like you and to get a VC that actually looks like you. So I also want to ask, how did you handle that transition with the amount of grace and like you held that well with the amount of backlash you were getting from Senate?
You couldn't see what was going on behind closed doors.
There was a lot. And that's part one. And then part two, I actually want to say that I think we don't give enough credit to the standard or the level of education that we get from UCT. Because I studied my master's in London and I was shocked. And I think it's impeccable. And also going back to the point on entrepreneurship, I was also part of the VC funding part that led me into an entrepreneurship sort of journey. And I also want to say, like, how can we continue that? Because I think the only way we'll get economic development in this country is if we invest in the future of entrepreneurs. So it's twofold how you handled the part one in terms of the transition at UCT and entrepreneurship in South Africa.
Thank you. I suggest we take that question.
And by the way, we didn't set her up to do this.
Oh,
like she was. You were invited today. She's invited today.
She's a UCT student. She wouldn't a graduate. She wouldn't have been agreed to be set up by a vets graduate.
All right, let's go to Ruth.
Spice.
Go Ruth. Oh Ruth, you've got a terrible voice. You can shout from there.
No, you're so bad. Thank you.
Sharing your knowledge with us. However, don't you think it's time for change in the way the schooling system is implemented? It's okay. Maybe now it's starting to change, but in terms of assessing children, what are their strengths?
Yeah.
What is their natural capability? So often the thing about schooling is that we are all just put in the same box.
True.
All right, this is not a chance for you to pontificate as a future politician.
Agree.
But I mean, you do agree with that, right?
I agree. And of course, we haven't said anything about the UCT Online High School.
Mm.
And the UCT Online High School is not just a school online. The pedagogy is basically to disrupt that kind of idea that you put everyone in the same box and everyone whatever. So, and of course, we just done 1 year. Pity I won't be there, you know, when we celebrate our first matrix, but I'm going to be there in another form. But I'm going to just squeeze myself in to celebrate. But the pedagogy was in such a way that you don't move from one concept to the next. If you haven't mastered this one, we move at your pace. Students, even though it's online, of course, all the materials online are available to everyone, all the learners and everyone in the country. But if you register with the school, you get individual tutoring online. Mm. But it was basically to sort of, you know, stop this way of teaching students as if they are one group. And I mean, you've put it, you were very kind in the way you put it, because the way it is, it's almost like you can't even fail. You just go. We can't even tell you the truth. Let me not say fail, because we can say to you, you are not yet ready to go into the remainder theorem because you don't understand factorization. And if you don't understand factorization, the remainder theorem is going to be... Can you see what I'm saying? Like that, just it's fair for us to say that to you because we know that if you don't do this, then calculus is going to be impossible. So we delay you to improve this so that you can succeed in the long run. So I agree that it's got to change.
Good one, Ruth.
Yeah. And your thank you for what you said. I mean, it's the question that Gareth asked me about, how did I handle that transition? I mean, I got to UCT in July 2016, and you were there. I mean, in Joburg, here in Gauteng, they only know Roads Must Fall and Fees Must Fall. But at UCT, we also know Shackville, when the students built a shack on campus. I mean, UCT students are something else, you know. And I arrived just after Shackville and the banning of the art. And at a time when Sarah Bartman was in the library naked. And how that was a point of contestation, Sarah, and the colored artist who did that, who, I mean, it fascinating, huge politics, right? So when I got to UCT, one of the things that I did that we haven't talked about this, I don't know if you're aware, but I actually went to Biko Building. Yeah, I went to Biko Building. My predecessor didn't want, I was a deputy vice chancellor. And I asked him, I want to go to Biko Building where the students are occupying because I want to be on the ground. I want to hear. I'm new in this institution. I'd never lived in Cape Town. I just want to hear what the issues are, because this protest at UCT, I mean, it was shut down after shut down. There was like, yeah, it was bad, right? So I thought, I want to go. And he said, oh, no, it's not safe. It's not whatever. I said, what is not safe? What's the worst that can happen? He said, maybe they'll abduct you. Well, I said, okay, abduct. I have my bag, I have my phone, and I know all the students, whether they are Muslim Students Association or SASCO or EFF, I know them. I will call the ones in Gauteng to talk to their buddies in Cape Town to ask them to release it. You know. So I said, I have an apple, and then otherwise, you know, clearly they should have, you know. So I got there. I spent a week. The first few days, they didn't know who I am. It's nice to have a nice, cute body. Like, you know, the room was full. I sat on the floor. You know, I can do this very easily. And I listened. But it was very important for me to do that, because you get to hear the students talking about their problems. Like, it's the middle of the night. You realize, actually, the toy toy that you see during the day, it's not trivial. There's a whiteboard marker. They are talking issue number one, issue number two. Whilst they're doing, the one who's busy taking notes, it's not even the leader that you know. It's like the strengths here, right? And he keeps saying, hey, I've got my Alan Gray. I don't want to lose my Alan Gray. Okay, now, guys, focus. We've got to get these things, right? We've got to get these things, these demands met, because I've got to pass, otherwise I'm losing my Alan Gray. You know, and they do all of that. And you know, and of course, there's different characters. So it was very good to be there and see, you know, and just experience the students. And in a protest contest, there's all sorts of characters, and they all have a role. You know, the guitar player, you know, the one, the musician of the Fees Must Fall, who's now completing his PhD at Oxford, at Cambridge. And yeah, so you get all of these things. And that was very, they only noticed me maybe by day number 4 or 5. And they didn't notice me as a group. One of them, as I was going out, when they finished the meeting, said, I think that's the DVC, the new DVC. And then said, it's Prof Pakeng. Yes, I think it's. And then one came and said, Prof, it's good to see you here, you know. And I said, oh, yeah, nice, you know. But, that, you know, so, but that, I think, Gareth and Pumi, at some stage I thought you were going to ask me, what do I think is the reason, maybe, I was, because people might not know, I was never charged of any wrongdoing. I never received any charge. I never was disciplined. I've been getting performance bonuses for doing a great job. You know.
Guilty. Yeah, we still don't.
I got the second term for that, starting in July. But there I go, red carpet, door, gate, there we are. Adrian Basson says it was 12 million worth. But
it's not like someone like you is not going to be useful, and we don't need you in this country right now. So
but we
maybe there are greater things. I mean, I think it's always really, really difficult to leave one job, especially if there is a cloud of controversy around it.
He knows all about that.
Oh. I know. I was going to say he knows all about it.
But congratulations. I mean,
I was listening to 702 and he was there.
I'm sorry about that. Okay, we got two more questions. Canton's got one and then we'll take one more. So whoever else wants to go, put your hand up now so I can see you. And then I'll come to you after Canton.
Yeah, Gareth, as usual, I'm going to be a bit controversial about this.
Oh, no, I would never have guessed.
I'd like to put to you that academia, particularly in terms of university structures, are basically obsolete institutions.
Mm.
And I say it on the basis that if you look in terms of where the major developments in the world are coming from right now, Steve Jobs did not complete university. Mark Zuckerberg did not complete university. You look at the stuff that Elon Musk ended up studying. These are all people who are making seminal impacts upon the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the academic institutions do not produce that caliber of person who is actually making seismic transformation in the world. And one of the things that I'd like you to offer your thoughts on is the idea that universities right now, by their very nature, have become institutions that are not able to foster that type of creativity. And I'll give you a very specific example, just the concept of a peer review mechanism, which means that anytime someone injects a new idea, in order for it to gain prominence in academia, that idea has to be peer-reviewed. And if the peers do not have that within the scope of their experience, they can't possibly recognize the value in it. You know, in a very specific example, if you're a computer science person who is teaching the intricacies of chip design and suddenly quantum computing appears on the scene, you've got no way of actually comprehending something that doesn't fit into it. So I'd like your thoughts in terms of whether the peer review mechanism is something that actually prevents universities. And, you know, I don't want us to pick on South Africa. This is something that applies around the world. Whether that's something that actually holds back academia from doing the type of thing that it could be doing. And then the other thing that I'd like to propose, and I'd like your thoughts on that as well, is that when academic papers are published, that they should be published anonymously. And the reason why I say that is because far too often people don't pay attention to the idea. They rather take a look at who is the person who was actually originating the idea. Mm-hmm. And that, to my mind, is fundamentally anti-academic. And, of course, the third problem, which, you know, goes back to Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell, who came up with this idea that all of your academic papers have to be published in journals where you have to subscribe to them. And I'm of the view that all academic papers should be in the public domain so that they can become part of the larger education system. And it's to my view, I don't believe that universities can be improved until we address these things. Now that you're not formally in the university structure, you can comment on this. And I'd really like to have your feedback.
No, that's an easy one to comment on.
Peer review, anonymous publication, and free journal.
And free journals, absolutely.
But it's also the I mean, I just, here's the thing. What you're talking about in terms of, and I want to get to the point about universities don't necessarily put out new innovations, that's what you say, or new knowledge. I guess you say new knowledge, not necessarily innovation. And you mentioned Steve Jobs, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I don't want us to get into the debate of the role of Steve Wozniak in the journey of Steve Jobs and whether Jobs would have achieved what he had achieved without Wozniak. And why is it that we're not focusing on what Wozniak brought, where he studied, what he studied, right? I think that's important. I think the idea that Elon Musk, he's the one doing, but he's not doing all these things alone, right? So I think we shouldn't undermine that and say, you know, simply because Bill Gates and blah blah dropped out, that's what young people would do when they want to they don't want to do a higher education. So I don't think so. But at the same time, you haven't also told me about someone who's doing research on lung cancer, on TB, which is one of our biggest problems. Actually, TB kills more people than HIV, than COVID did in this country. And you haven't said to me, here's somebody who's doing groundbreaking research on TB. They are coming up with the vaccine or whatever for TB, and they've never been to school at all. Okay? So to think that we can just willy-nilly say universities are useless because Steve there, Steve that, is actually a little problematic. And then the issue of reviews and whatever, it's an old debate. It's an interesting debate about when new ideas come through and you've got the old guard, if you like. It's another way of how the establishment controls. And by the way, that's another place where you see the racism. I mean, when we talk about decolonize, you see the racism in there. Journals don't, you submit a paper, you submit your name. But even if, you know, if you are in social science, you're doing empirical studies, they can see where your data is from South Africa. If you're quoting mainly people from Africa and from the global South, you know, it's like you haven't, you know, whatever. There's politics there. But this idea is not new in terms of how people get disadvantaged. I don't know whether there are any mathematicians in the room, but there's a very interesting story in the history of mathematics, of algebra, of someone called Galois Evariste, who is actually the founder of Galois theory. It's a branch of algebra in mathematics. And he was coming up with all these proofs and whatever, and he was dismissed, they were rejected, they were whatever, and in fact, he ended up dying. I mean, he was young. He died at 21 in a fight over a girlfriend somewhere in the streets of Paris. Mathematicians
even
are normal,
even mathematicians
too.
Need girls. Love. Superior.
I asked. I think Vets had an honors offering an honors course called Galois theory as well. And it's only after he died that his proofs were found, and then as time goes on, and they were looked at, and then they were that's the basis of Galois theory. So I'm just saying it's not new, and my hope is that when new things come in, we get the kind of reviewers who say, I don't understand this, but wow, is it fascinating. Let's get more people into this. And you know, sometimes when we talk about universities, we talk about as if these kind of things only happen in universities. But actually, you only have to have looked at the first episode of Steinheist, and you'll see that it happens elsewhere too. Steinheist. You know, it's fascinating over trusting can be a problem, as lack of trust, dismissing people with new ideas. You know, so here you had someone who, you know, I agree that those kinds of loopholes are there in terms of new ideas that might not grow fast, but at the moment, frankly speaking, they are growing very fast. Science is growing so fast. There's a danger, actually, that we might have lots of other inequalities. Work on human augmentation. How do we know that now you can change who you are to give yourself an advantage? But can you make yourself more intelligent? We can design babies now, right? How far can we go? Are there rules to this thing?
I'm waiting for that, by the way. That's why I haven't got children.
And that's what you're waiting for. But also, the thing is that can the poor do this? Can the poor always cannot do this? You know, so there's all sorts of things about, you know, there's strict, and that's the kind of stuff that I was last year in the second semester. I sort of talked about online, I think first semester, sometime last year, that I did the Sunday sessions on just to get young people to think about these kind of things, because you want, and I thought I can do that because I have a lot of following. Young people come, they want to listen. So basically, and I just think we need more of this. So they make education fashionable, and they, well, all these things is to get more young people to say, this is exciting.
This is the live audience. This will be heard by many thousands more people, and they will listen to it because they're interested in exactly this, what you've just said, and the other opinions that you have. And I encourage you to follow Professor Mamokgethi, because I think we can all do well to see, first of all, how she handles all the ridiculousness of the internet.
She makes great memes, none of us are professors, by the way. You make great memes.
Makes good memes. One last question, anybody? Anybody wants to go? You got one last chance. I do think we had... All right, Renata, I can't say no to you. And ladies, women... Sorry, Sanelle. You'll have to deal with it.
I don't have a smart question, so I just wanted to ask you, your shoes are so dope. Where are they from?
Thank you. You've got such good taste.
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah, they're really beautiful. So where are they from?
You know, this is Doc Martens.
And here's the thing.
They are connected to UCT because in 2016, as you know, I worked 12 years at Vets, 8 years at UNISA. After I got a job at UCT... It was the first time I'm relocating for a job. And I wanted a gift from me to me. And I went to Doc Martens in Rosebank. And I bought these. I'm surprised nobody has them. Overseas, everywhere I go, everyone wants them. And then I thought Cape Town is funky. More funky than it's arty, it's whatever. I took them to Cape Town. I promise you. They were so scared of my earrings that I'd never wore the shoes. I only wore the shoes when I traveled. Until one day I decided, come on. I didn't wear them to work. I started wearing them to work actually during the lockdown. After the lockdown, I went to work with them. But they're not as funky as I thought, because I thought RT, tech capital, you know. But wow, woo, they're so conservative. They're all dressed in black and brown. Seriously, you wear a pink coat. Right. That was too much.
Sanelle, you can go with your question. I mean, we don't want to make you feel like...
He'll never comment ever again. That was a bit frivolous, but it's good.
Nothing wrong with that.
This is the show.
Sorry. It's actually Zanelle.
Oh, sorry, Zanelle.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Quick one, Prof. In terms of education, I feel like there's an over expression when it comes to tertiary education, but then from primary and secondary, what do you think the role of the SGB and LRC structures are? And from an SGB perspective, do you think there's an over-reliance on government when it comes to that particular structure? And if there is, what is it? And can we perhaps find a way of correcting it with your guidance?
Are you a member of an SGB? Or you've been?
Not even. I was fortunate to go to my former school. I don't know how I ended up there. And it was the third attempt to host an election meeting. And from about 1,200 students, there was only 6 parents.
Wow.
And that actually scared me.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, so much has become politicized in our country. SGBs, university councils, it's so sad, man. So there shouldn't be an over-reliance on government. But the structure itself, it's like people get into it for different reasons, you know? And for me, it saddens me. And I keep thinking, who's going to change this? It can only be us. I don't have a response in terms of how to solve that. Because in the very same way, I feel that university councils, they're like the SGBs of universities, the boards or whatever. And they are also so politicized that people... Some people are not so focused on the good of the university or the good of the school. They are focused on the political agenda.
Their personal
political agenda or whatever agenda the constituency that put them here, they've got to, you know, and for me, that's our greatest weakness in South Africa. And people think this is only a black thing. It's a white thing, it's a colored thing, it's an Indian thing. It is so depressing. It's a South African thing. It destroys a lot of good that we have. And frankly speaking, I think if it were not for that, I'd still be VC of UCT.
Mm.
Yeah. If it were not for this politicization, you know, the very thing that you see that, you know. So, and that's why I keep thinking it's that. I think some people got scared by one of the things, your transition and how I manage things. I mean, I talked about going to Biko building, but I also, when I became VC, you know, all the vice chancellors get an inauguration. I chose not to have it.
Mm.
It's a waste of money. You know, I asked them how much. They said, yeah, we've budgeted 2 million, what. And I said, no, but I don't want it. I don't want it. I said, I don't want it. How can we do that? There are students who, I mean, this is 2018. We've been having protests until my predecessor, his farewell, the last farewell on campus didn't happen. The students disrupted it. And then the farewell had to be outside campus, you know? But that was the last shutdown. Last shutdown, right.
Now, and you're not even getting one, when?
Yeah, you talk about that. but I, at one level, I'm thinking they didn't ask me because they thought if they told me that they're going to do a farewell, I would ask them how much would it cost. and then I would have a good idea about what to do with the money. Because with the inauguration, I said to them, I want that money, we'll find more money, we'll top that up, and we pay the fees of students who have completed in between 2015 and 2018, and they haven't graduated. They're sitting at home, they haven't graduated, but they've completed.
Mm.
So I managed to get other money. We made it four million, and then we looked at the students, you know, they're sitting at home, and we could only rescue 100 of them. And then they said, of course, my boss, the chair of council at that time, was like, so what do we do? You know what happens at graduations? Do you know? Don't you want to wear a new dress? I'm like, well, I wear new dresses every day. What are you talking about? Do you know what happens at inaugurations? I'm like, yes, I've been in universities for years. They give speeches. They tell the vice chancellor how amazing she is and so on. Unions come to speak, students, all these constituencies. I don't want that. Because I know already.
Mm.
Are you proud?
And then I said, he said to me, the challenge, sorry, he said, we also invite donors. So if we are not having it, how are we going to have those people? And then I said, those people that we would invite to donate to the university should be very pleased that the person who's taking over the university is not going to waste their money.
They'd rather see the graduations.
And so they said, oh, but there's a book you have to sign. I said, when those 100 students graduate,
send the book.
Grasha Machel must come, must put the gown on me, bring the book, I'll sign it on that day, and then I'll be the guest speaker for the graduation. And that's exactly what happened.
Beautiful.
You know, so, but I'm the only vice chair. I thought after that, I've disrupted this, whatever. No. Oh, no. There's too many mainstream people in this world. That's why I had to go, guys. I mean, I'm too much for the system. Too round and I'm square. Because I thought people will think twice after that, anyone who comes after me. Wow. So all the vice chancellors in this country have had inaugurations. I didn't have it, but I didn't need it. Neither did I fly business class on university money. No business class. So very interesting when we go to meetings elsewhere on the continent and with the universities all over the country. And then when we come back, the vice chancellor of the leading university on the continent goes to potato class. Everyone stops at and then when we get to the airport, their drivers all come in nice cars. When Adam Habib was here, he used to give me a lift. Can we give it? Because I don't have a driver. I don't do driver. I drive myself. For my sons, drive me like VC. No driver, no living maid, no cook, no business class. The only time I get business class is if universities overseas invite me. And I got a lot of that. UCT didn't pay most of my travel because you overseas universities. And that's when I got business class, and that's fine. But UCT money, business class, never.
Well, there nice. We go. That's a great place to end it.
That's a great place to end.
So thank you very much, Prof. I really thought that we'd argue and we'd talk about, you know, the politics of universities, and I find myself, and I'm sure many people in the audience do too, a lot of people might not have even known this story and came just because they knew we'd have someone interesting here. But you've really, I think you've wowed us all.
Oh, really?
And I think that's saying too, yeah, I don't think that's saying too much, Pumi. I really do. I'm so glad that we've got people like you in education in this country. I hope that we have more conversations like this. I hope that you find somewhere else where you can be as dynamic as you have been. And I don't think that's going to be difficult, because there are lots of places who need this sort of leadership. And I want to thank everybody in the audience for coming tonight. This is our second live event. We are going to do more of these. It's terrific to have you here. Pums, thank you so much. Pumilele jumped in at the last minute and said, I have some questions.
Yeah, that's why I'm sitting in the middle. I wedged myself in.
And our fellow comrade in the Burning Platform, Kanthan Pillay, I'm glad you could be here, Kanthan. But of course, all of you are VIPs. That's why it's a small, intimate little crowd. Please go and have some drinks, have some snacks. I want to thank my team for putting this together, Lebang and Mash and Ryan and Jane and Komolemo and Sipiwe. And Dari's here somewhere as well. So everybody, thank you so much.
She's
for
making
your
sure
hard
the
work.
Website's got Komolemo. All the work.
Have I left anyone out? No, Jane, you never leave Jane out.
Ah.
All right, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Prof. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It was amazing. It was amazing. Thank you.
CliffCentral.com.